Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 76 is being brought to you once again by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So 76, what comes to mind with that number? Anything?
Football. I don't know. The 76ers isn't like a real... No.
It's close.
Is the 76ers, is that like a basketball team?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They're from Philadelphia.
49ers. Isn't okay, that a football team?
Which is nothing like 76.
No, but that's a football team, right?
1776, 1976.
You lost me.
Bicentennial. Oh. Were you alive in 1976?
Definitely not.
Wow.
But 1996, yeah, I was in sixth grade.
Yeah, that's when the Olympics were in Atlanta. But
that's
I'm talking
right.
about like the bicentennial celebration. They made these really cool quarters that celebrated 1776-1976. And I think they had like a Minuteman. Or, do you know what a Minuteman is?
No.
Like a... Gosh, I hate to say it. I don't know. I'm going to say... I don't know if it's a Union or a Confederate soldier or what kind of soldier. Actually, I'm going to stop right there because it was neither of those. It was the soldiers who helped us to get our freedom. So anyway, that's about as deep as I go into history. Clearly,
that's not your strong subject.
Yeah, definitely one of my weakest subjects for sure. So we are once again in beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia on Labor Day. Labor Day weekend, and actually Labor Day is when we're recording the podcast.
Yes, specifically Labor Day itself. I was going to backtrack just for a second here. So you, as you do every podcast, you mentioned that we give you a behind-the-scenes glance of our clinic and the people in it. It has been a few episodes since we've had a guest. And so our last guest was Dr. Ashley Settles, literally on her first day, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we do have some new people that maybe we'll torture and bring on the show. You guys will be excited to hear from them.
Well, we have a lot of people, a lot of quote-unquote old people who've not made the show either. Dr. Evans would be one.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Evans would be a hoot on here.
Did Dr. Stevens come on?
He did.
Okay.
Yep.
Dr. Wanchick we've had. We need to get him back. So, yeah, we need to start getting back in that habit because I think people probably get tired of hearing from just you and I.
Never. Okay. I think they
I
like
could be
it.
Wrong.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. But
if they're listening, they're listening for a reason, and that's to hear me and you talk.
There you go. We're podcasting. So are you aware that the FedEx Cup, the final day, is going on today in Atlanta?
FedEx Cup, I'm assuming, is that football?
It's close. It's golf.
Like soccer. Oh, heck no, then. I'm definitely not at all aware.
It's at... kind of historic golf course. Not as historic as Augusta.
Oh, the TPC in Sugarloaf?
No. It's a little bit... So that's where they used to do the Bell South Classic. Used to be held at Sugarloaf. And then they started doing one of the senior events there. But this is at Eastlake, which is down right off of I-20. It's not really east... it's east of East Atlanta, if you will. It is in the middle of... kind of nowhere, or really nowhere you would want to be, but it is a beautiful golf course. And so today they're just
never
now
heard of such.
Yeah, they're just now teeing off, and I forget how many millions of dollars is in the purse. I think it's either 7 or 9 million.
This is for like real golf people, like yeah. not like people just to go out like amateurs and
no,
try to win
is,
money.
This okay. is what these golfers have been working towards, or one of the goals that most of them have been working towards all year. And so Dustin Johnson is leading the pack. He's like five shots up, but since he quote-unquote won and positioned himself through the regular year, he got a three-stroke advantage.
Hey, listen, folks, you don't just get veterinary stuff on this podcast. We talk sports.
So anyway,
and more importantly, important sports like golf.
Like golf that's going on in Atlanta, Georgia right now. So
that's
he's
so
got
crazy.
A five-stroke lead, and he is expected to do well. He's been playing better than anybody during the COVID
Dustin.
Time. So anyway, you're bored with that.
Yeah,
football is starting, I believe, this upcoming Thursday night.
That's even more exciting.
Kansas City Chiefs, I believe, are playing the first game. So whoop. I can see the happiness on your face.
Hey, guess what? I was not as a high schooler.
A sports fan.
No, a cheerleader.
Oh, wow. just as an aside, I did find out today when I shopped at Publix this morning that they are now resuming their normal schedule and they're going to be open until 10 p.m.
Yes. So I was at Publix last night and I realized that they actually peeled up the directions on the floor. Like, do not enter one way, this way, that way on the aisles. So I do believe that they still ask you to be masked in the store. I don't know if it's a requirement or not, but the workers are still wearing masks. But yeah, the directions are being peeled up off the floor. And I thought that was interesting.
Home Depot yesterday, small family, I think two kids, mom and dad, you know, clearly blatantly defying wearing the mask and just like, you know, looking at people like, I dare you to tell me to put a mask on. So I just kind of kept my distance. But yeah, I'm very hopeful that we can get through this Labor Day weekend. I know a lot of authoritative figures in public health suggested that kids not come home from school, not gather, not do all this, not do all that. And so maybe in 14 days, we're going to kind of know the fallout effect of Labor Day weekend. And I do believe if we can get kind of past that big hump without a major disaster, which I think a major disaster will not happen, that we will be okay. And then the next big hurdle is get through the election. I know you and your family are planning a trip.
It's a week long, yeah. So it's relatively decent.
But it'll be a little bit weird and different and under these circumstances. But, you know, I think for the most part, people that we know in our inner and outer circles, we're still trying to be safe.
Cautious, I think, is the word.
Not, yeah, we're not sheltering in place. That's just ridiculous. You can't do that.
Yeah. No, a majority of people, and I mean, we see it here with our clients. We see it with our coworkers, our employees. Everyone wants so badly to return to normal. Who knows what it will really look like and what we will take from here, as we've discussed weeks past. But I'm hopeful that, you know, we're not too far away.
You know, interesting, I think a week to 10 days ago, the law that prevented people from being evicted due to not paying their rent kind of expired.
Mm-hmm.
And then President Trump enacted basically via public health rule, not really law at this point, that it would be detrimental to the public if people were evicted or lost their housing. Then where would they go? They would, you know, either be homeless or be forced to move into other groups of people. And so he tried to make that happen, and I guess has at this point, but it hasn't been enacted in law. And so where I'm going with that is the road to recovery is going to be bumpy.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much, as we talked about, right? All the fallout effect. I was reading an article in the New York Times, and I guess I never really thought about it, but, you know, the people that have passed or the families that have been affected by coronavirus, like what have happened to the pets that lived with them? And I don't know that it's going to be a substantial amount of pets for sure, but I just thought it was interesting, a different perspective, something I haven't thought about.
Someone in my family the other day, actually it was Mary, my spouse, said that she had an acquaintance asked her if pets could, or if quote, if pets could get coronavirus, end quote. And I said, well, obviously the answer is yes, there have been some pets that have tested positive, but we don't think they get the clinical disease. And she said, well, this lady that was asking me wanted to get rid of her pet. And I'm like, what in the world are you thinking? Can pets get coronavirus? And so this particular individual, I'm assuming, thought that her pet's going to get it from somebody, not her, contract corona, and then be able to shed it to the person. So she wanted to get rid of her pet. And I'm like, that's the last thing you need to do.
Yeah, no, we've talked about that earlier on, like when this first all kind of came about. I think that there's still some people that are kind of scared of it and, you know, worried. And there's... there's still like that a little bit of uncertainty, right? But what we found and what studies have shown, and because all of the universities are doing studies on this right now,
right?
And nobody has come up with anything blatantly obvious. As far like majority of them are saying exactly what you said. Yes, they can contract the disease, but they're not shedding it. They don't have clinical signs and that kind of thing. One thing I found interesting along those lines is that there's actually a company in Texas that is actually making dog masks.
Huh.
So at first I thought it was the dumbest thing ever. I was like, oh God, they're like making these masks so that their pets don't get coronavirus. But then I actually thought about the pets out like in California right now where all that smoke is.
Yeah.
If it's a true like... it's not like going to be a respirator by any means, but if it's a true mask, does it help like for dust particles? Like let's say you have construction going on in your house, you have sanding and that kind of thing. Like your dog is susceptible to breathing in all that stuff just like we are. Are they not?
Are they like basket muzzles, but with masks? Have you seen a concept? Yeah,
I've seen a concept. That's pretty much it. It's like a, it's not really a basket muzzle. It's more like a soft muzzle. But the front is like a mask or a, I guess a mesh substrate.
Are they decorated like with dog teeth and cat teeth?
I haven't seen
scary
any.
Doberman teeth.
I haven't seen any thus far, but
gosh.
Like I said, at first when I read about it, I was like, that seems like the most pointless thing ever. But on the contrary, if we're not looking at it for corona, is there
another use?
Is there some sort of use for it? For dust, smoke inhalation, that kind of thing. But you have to be anticipating all that stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So people are definitely right or wrong, good or bad, taking advantage of the situation on a daily basis.
Sure.
And I think, you know, you and I have talked about that before and we kind of, I don't know, kind of frown, I guess, at that. But really, that's just kind of what happens in the U.S. of A. You kind of, it's a capitalistic society. And so people are...
Capitalist or opportunist.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs.
So,
I mean...
So Home Depot yesterday again, I saw literally walls and walls of masks and hand sanitizer.
Oh, for sure.
And all of these products that were such in short supply 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
The price of masks, what were they... pre-pandemic for a box of 3M tie-on surgical masks, were they
ours
like $7
that we would buy? Yeah, they were. Mm-hmm. They were less than $8 with our quote-unquote VMG discounts and that kind of thing. Yeah.
And so,
and these were quantities of 50, and
they
these
were surgical
3M
quality,
surgical quality.
And then the ear loop,
I mean, we used to
somewhat medical grade, but we did not like those masks. Those went to like $50
mm-hmm.
when you could get them.
Yep.
And now I think I saw yesterday they're maybe $19 in big box stores.
So, but there's a difference. So the ones that we were buying from our vendors, they were different grades, I guess. And I don't know exactly all of them, but...
But the filtration. And,
exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
All the ones that we would buy from the vendors, even the 3-ply ear loops, they were still surgical grade. And so those used to be dirt cheap for us. I mean, dirt cheap in the sense that... We obviously are AHA accredited, so every surgical case got a new mask. We ripped them off and threw them in the trash.
I guess we've kind of quit stockpiling our used, but we've got a trash bag probably with 1,000, maybe not 1,000, at least 500 masks in it downstairs in case we needed to re-sterilize and gas those.
Yeah, because they really made us terrified that they were going to be a short supply forever.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to say is that early corona times when masks were available at like big box stores like Sam's, Costco, they were literally $30 a box for 50. They have dropped their price at Sam's Club, which I find interesting, to like $9 a box of 50.
Huh.
So I believe that whole supply and demand thing is like definitely obvious there and working.
Sure. For sure. So you were mentioning the studies being done at a lot of universities, whether it's animal or, you know, human related, which some of those papers have been pretty interesting. I think also the testing is still, I really wish there was a standardized methodology with the testing and we could understand that a little bit better, because it just seems weird to me. Like Texas A&M was one of the initial, the animal diagnostic lab there started doing human coronavirus testing. And now one of the stories from last week from the AVMA Smart Brief is that Oregon State is processing COVID-19 tests. We're seeing, you know, we still have the rapid test, the semi-rapid test, the antibody test,
mm-hmm.
my son Asher went and got tested last week because he thought maybe there was some previous exposure, and within 2 hours he had his test results back. And so I don't know where I'm going with all that, other than it's still kind of all over the place, all over the map.
I think it plays back to your whole opportunistic market, right? In the sense that all of the labs have generated their own test, and because we are in a pandemic and an emergency state, the FDA is allowing them all these like emergency rights to test, but we don't know the efficacy of any of the tests, right? Yeah. So it's one of those things that I don't know if we'll ever really know the truth to, but you have to just kind of put your trust in something. And so when you get tested, you have to trust that it is an accurate result, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Let's
talk about bats. I think last week I said, man, it seems like bats are in the news all the time.
Yeah.
With this whole COVID thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what the story was last week. Hopefully I'm not repeating it. But one of the smart brief news stories from the New York Times is how to get bats out of the attic.
Yeah.
So
we've talked about bats before, right? Mm-hmm. Rabid bats, essentially, or not rabid bats, but rabid carriers, rabies carriers.
So the interesting thing, according to the New York Times, which I'm not sure how accurate this is, they report that only about one or two human cases of rabies in the U.S. and Canada occur each year through bats.
Related to bats?
I think it would be much,
higher.
Now, when I say much higher, I'm not talking hundreds and thousands, but, you know, 10 is quite a bit higher than that.
So what's interesting is, maybe Lance isn't the right example here because sometimes he can be a little dense on certain things.
Wow.
But
sorry, Lance.
I mean, but it's true. We took the dogs for a walk at dusk the other night, and in our neighborhood, we were kind of, there's like a U-turn where our pool is. And so we were kind of walking through there, and there was this low-flying bird,
mm-hmm.
At dusk.
Fluttering.
Yeah. And I told Lance, I'm mosquitoes. Like, let's go because that's a bat. Like, let's keep our distance, whatever. And he was like, that's a bat? I'm like, yes, not a surprise. They fly around outside.
So usually here at the clinic, if we're leaving at, you know, at that same time, there's going to be a handful fluttering.
Yeah.
Between us and the post office.
And they're quick. You could certainly mistake them for a bird. But, I mean, I don't know. I didn't want to hang around, I guess. I don't think the bat was going to, like, dive bomb me by any means, but.
But you were concerned enough to say keep moving.
Yeah. So. Because, like, Tobin, he bites at things, right? Like if a bee, you know, comes by, he's gonna bite at it. I don't think he could jump 12 feet in the air to, you know, get a bat, but anyways, my point being is that they're definitely active, even if you don't think that they are. They're in everyone's neighborhood. It's not like they're only in Transylvania.
Yeah, I mean, we had bats in our Monroe house when we first moved into that. Gosh, that was a long time ago, but 95-year-old house, and I was a little bit freaked out to realize that I had bats in the attic.
Yeah, I mean, so to your point, the article that you're talking about basically says that if you get them, they need to be professionally removed. Don't go up there yourself. And then you need to seal off
their entrances. That's the key. They leave at night, they go out and feed, and you need to seal that up after they left. Otherwise, they will be stuck in there for a while. So, bats are... they're kind of like bees. They're very important these days.
Yeah. So one thing you were talking about, your Monroe house, there was another article that I read talking about real estate. So actually the New York Times published an article back August 10th or something about how the veterinary industry seems to be not necessarily resistant, but prospering during these COVID times where other industries are not so prosperous, if that makes sense. And so then I was thinking, real estate is another one of those. Like Lance's little brother is a real estate agent. We have a few, I guess, friends locally, or I do, that are real estate agents, and they post things on Facebook and that kind of thing, like houses they have for sale or when they've sold, they post pictures of their new homeowner, that kind of thing. And I feel like it's truly exploded. But I was thinking back, or this article that I read says that majority of people actually now are considering their pets more when buying a house. And I thought that was interesting.
Huh.
So you talked about that Monroe house before, and we've talked about it, you know, off the podcast. But I think something along the lines of like 63% of people who reported to this, New York Times, said that they had a pet or were considering a pet, and that their pet was going to be considered when buying or selling their home.
Sure. So do you have the full basement off the back, and there's, you know, two flights of stairs for the pet to get down? How old is the pet?
Fenced in yard, hardwood floors.
Hardwood floors, all of these things, for sure. Pets, obviously, more and more are members of the family, you know.
And I think it's becoming totally different than when I grew more up. And more obvious. Like, yeah. I said, so the New York Times, you know, they posted this whole, like, veterinary industry, it seems to be reluctant to what's happening. But I think it's not really our industry. I think it's these people, like the populations. If they're considering buying a house, let's say a $300,000 to $500,000 investment about their animal that's going to live essentially 10, 12 years, I don't know. It's important, I think. And
so I was listening to The Highway yesterday.
Radio station on Sirius XM.
Yeah. Do you know the country artist Tyler Rich?
No.
Know his name?
I mean, maybe if you sing a song.
I'm not going to sing it, but he sings that song, Leave Her Wild. Leave Her Wild.
Yes, I've heard that song.
So the guy Buzz, the DJ Buzz, was interviewing him, and they were just talking about how he's put himself out there on social media during this pandemic times. He's written a new album, or whatever you call them these days. And then they were talking about he basically was involved in rescue dog work, and he saw this older dog that I'm not sure the circumstances, but it was sounded pretty debilitated. It was in its senior years, and he and his wife decided to adopt the dog and just, you know, let it have a happy life, whatever that means, because we all know healthy pet,
happy life.
Happy life. In this case, the pet was not that healthy, but they, again, did not get all the details. But months after bringing this dog in, he says it's absolutely a member of the family. I think he had another 10-year-old dog. This dog is 10 to 12. They're best buddies. And so you could just hear in his voice how happy he was to have saved this pet. And it's in a really great situation, and it's living out, you know, the rest of its life. So I just thought that was a cool story. We always kind of try to pick up and really would love to get people like that on our podcast and involved with us. But that was just a really cool story. So, healthy pet, happy life.
Okay.
Let's talk about allergies. You brought that up, I think. Is it this month or last month?
So, on all of our social media, we were blasting about August being Itchy Pet Awareness Month.
Okay. So, what are the common causes for a dog to... We're just going to talk about dogs, I think. Let's exclude cats at this point, because they're a little bit of a different beast when it comes to... dermatologic disease.
Sure.
So itchy dog, what are some of the most common causes in Georgia?
So like legitimate causes, or like what people think when they call into the animal hospital?
Sure. Yes.
Like I think my dog got bit by an ant on its foot because it's licking its foot and it hasn't stopped. And then it comes in and its foot is brown because it has salivary staining.
Yeah. So definitely insect bites do happen, but typically they don't cause a kind of a chronic, you know, intermittent or continuous itching.
Okay.
What's the word for itchy?
Puretic? Puretis?
Puretis.
Did I say it wrong?
No, you said it right. the pet is puretic, or they have puretis.
So I was trying to think like if there's like a itch versus itching or itchiness. We were trying to find
a word for the week, and we couldn't find one. I actually looked up cesarean because Dr. Stevens did a C-section or cesarean on a dog this week. And in the medical dictionary, I could not find a definition for cesarean. You look under cesarean, whether it's spelled C-E-S or C-A-E-S, and it says C-section. So you not like S-E-E section. And so you go to section, and then you look under cesarean, it talks about, you know, basically cutting through the abdomen into the uterus to deliver a fetus.
But there's no definition.
It doesn't
of
tell
cesarean.
Me. So
it sounds Greek to me, but
Dr. Reese, that's your homework. You need to educate me, unless Angel's going to Google it right now.
Oh no, we're going to give Dr. Reese homework.
Yeah, she can let me know later this week. So, So anyway, yeah. So in Georgia, we see flea allergy, dermatitis.
Fleas, definitely. So ectoparasites, right? Yeah. Would you consider an ant bite or a bee sting like an ectoparasite? Not really, because they don't thrive on the animal.
They are, but flea allergy is really, it's different than flea bite dermatitis, which is kind of like what you're talking about.
Okay.
But flea allergy dermatitis is where the pet or patient is allergic to the saliva of the flea bite, and they can itch for days after a bite. And so that's one thing we always like to try to question our clients about, you know, have they seen any fleas or flea dirt, not only like today, but, you know, within the past week, because mm-hmm. some people are still bathing their pets in flea shampoos and they're letting the flea population build up on a weekly basis, and they go in and kill them and then they get reinfested. So flea allergy dermatitis.
Okay.
What's the most common cause of pruritus in Georgia on dogs that we see?
Allergies?
Yes, also known as?
Atopy?
Atopy or atopic dermatitis.
So, specifically allergies to the environment.
Environmental allergens, so...
Not a food allergy, which is what we see a lot of clients. I spoke with a client yesterday. You know, she wants to put her dog on a grain-free diet. We talked about grain-free diets last year when the FDA...
She doesn't want to feed chicken. She doesn't want to feed corn.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to feed...
So there's a lot of misconceptions out there, but specifically atopy is environmental versus a food allergy.
And we used to think that it was all... When I got out of school, and really for 10 to 15 years, that it was all inhaled. And so the explanation used to be people get hay fever and asthma. Dogs get itchy skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is somewhat still true, but now we think it's more of the topical exposure. And these allergens kind of break down the, what's the barrier? The derm barrier is. You know, they break that down, and the itchier they get, and the more disease, the more that barrier is broken down. And so they get this atopic dermatitis. Hallmarks are... red inflamed skin on the inside of the ears, licking, chewing at the feet, pink interdigital areas on the, or I guess toe webs, interdigital areas of the mm-hmm. feet, flank redness.
Like underbelly?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So redness, which equals inflammation, hair loss, and then actively rubbing, scratching, chewing, licking.
So sometimes on the bellies, though, you can get secondary infections, right?
Can.
So you typically see that in like a pustule or like a dry, scabby area.
Yep, yep. So you may or may not know this. Derm, which was a pretty interesting course I enjoyed in school, primary and secondary lesions. So you definitely talk about primary lesion of, you know, erythema, all of these.
Erythema meaning?
Red inflamed skin.
Okay.
But the secondary infection is going to be a pustule or, you know, a scale or even alopecia, I believe, is a secondary, not a primary. So it's just kind of a cool way to look at things. But yeah, that is super common. We are very fortunate. We have many great drugs available. Actually, not many. Two great drugs.
From the same Zoetis,
mm-hmm. Cytopoint injection, which is a monoclonal antibody that we can administer, and it's effective for 30 days to basically take out the antigen that's causing the itch that we believe. And then we have Apoquel, which is...
Same, a monoclonal antibody.
It's oral. It's an oral tablet that kind of blocks interleukin 131, I think it is. I forget. So those are really our primary recommendations these days versus steroids, antihistamines, fatty acids, all these other things that we sometimes need to do.
But do we not still recommend like a fatty acid to keep the derm barrier up?
We don't as much as we used to.
No. Okay.
We don't. I mean, it's good. Fatty acids are great. I say this all the time. I take 3 of my little fatty acid capsules every day. So I do think they are very, very good. But the primary therapy that we're recommending are going to be either Cytopoint or Apoquel.
And so if they do have pustules and things like that, or these secondary infections, they may be coupled with like a Cytopoint to relieve the itch, but then also some sort of antibiotic to take care of that secondary infection.
Or Convenia injection, something to take care of the secondary staph infection. They're almost always staph infection, at least initially.
Okay. And if they're an ear infection, because you said like the pinkness in the ear, you treat mm-hmm. that more topically, or would you treat it kind of with the same approach?
So both. So your dad's dog, Jake, was in this past week, and he kind of had a flare-up of mm-hmm. yeast otitis, and one ear was worse than the other. Mm-hmm. I think the right was worse than the left.
Exactly.
They were pink. There was yeast there. And the reason is that his ears are itchy and inflamed, and so he's shaking his head, scratching with his back foot, unless he's a, you know, super, you know, talented dog that, well, I guess they could, they can. Usually it's back.
Yeah, but I mean, could. Sometimes, like, I'll see my dog Zoe, she'll
rub her face.
She'll lick her paw and then rub her face, lick, yeah. rub. But that is, I feel like that's more of a cleaning aspect versus, like, an itching, yeah. right? Because she can't scratch. It's yeah. like a one rub versus like that back leg when they get that reflex going. I mean, they itch.
So for him, yeah, we cleaned his ears out. We started him on some Animax topical medication and then gave him a cytopoint injection to try to help relieve the itch and get to the root of the problem. So,
and the reason he didn't get an antibiotic on top of that is because he didn't have a secondary skin infection.
Correct.
Like pustules or things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeast infection only in the ears, and we were taking care of that. So okay, so we're 30 minutes into this.
So hopefully Jake will be a happy pet and my parents will have a happy life.
Yes, he'll be healthy and happy, and then everybody will be happy for sure. So, all right, are you ready to sign us out?
I think so. Check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs and our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, what?
Do we have any new listeners from last week?
I didn't see.
I think there were two.
Two new listeners?
Yeah.
How does that mean? What do you mean?
Two new people subscribe to the podcast.
I don't know what that means.
Okay.
So I don't see subscribers. That's like a marketing gen thing. But I see the followers on Instagram. Did you follow us on Instagram?
No.
Okay, yeah. So I wouldn't know.
Okay. And remember...
And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.
Bye.